Welcome back to The Elaborators. A very, very special episode of The Elaborators today because, well, we've got a special guest in the studio and we want to ask about, well, I guess, fathering, parenting, being a good role model to the young kiddies. Speaking of all of those things, producer Simon, how are you?
That's very kind of you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's all right.
I'm well. Answer to your question.
Good answer. I feel like you'd rate yourself as a dad, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I enjoy being a dad.
Yeah. What's your qualifications for being a dad?
Oh, I have two children.
Yeah. Didn't you have to get a certificate or something?
No,
first?
Funnily enough, they're just a few days in the hospital and they kick you out the door and say,
good luck to you.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck to you.
Yeah.
Okay, craziest story so far. Well, how old are your children right now?
They are 8 and 10.
8 and 10. Which one's the best one?
don't answer that. Imagine if I had a quick response.
I was getting worried there for a second. I thought you were going to answer the question. Please don't answer the question.
The best at which thing, though? Because obviously they're all different.
Oh, there you go. Now you're talking.
It's true.
That's lovely. That deserves a... lovely. So, okay. So, 8 and 10. Best parenting story so far.
Oh, man. That's tough.
I know.
Like funny...
Like Beck may have fired you as a husband if she'd known what had happened.
I forgot to pick him up from school a few months ago.
Oh, nicely done.
So that didn't quite get me fired.
But no.
Miley, so. I got the call from the school saying, anyone coming to pick up your kids? And I quickly packed up and I got there.
There you go. Round of applause.
Thanks, everybody.
Round of applause for you.
They forgave me.
I tell you what, though, I think the idea of parenting is a little overwhelming for most people who are doing it. And for some people who are thinking they may do it, it can be an overwhelming thought as well. But there's lots of things that help us along the journey. One of the things that I've really appreciated over the journey has been essentially the input of the elders, you know, the men older than me that have done it before me and done it in different ways. I'm probably one of the lucky ones in that sense. And I think you are too, in that we have good relationships with our fathers.
Yes.
And they're still alive and still part of our lives. And my dad, I still am lucky enough to be able to call him and have a chat and talk about, you know, where he failed me as a father. Sorry, Donnie. Sorry, no. Yeah. Actually, no, that's not true. I don't do that. But, you know, there are things that we can talk about now as I'm a bit older and we can talk about shared experiences. Do you find similar with your old man?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't really go back in time very often, but he still loves DIYing and I love DIYing and together we DIY everything we can.
Yeah.
So it's good quality time spent doing that.
Quality time building stuff. And so I know that's not everybody's story, but I thought it was worth pointing out that that's where you and I have been able to experience the journey from a dad in our lives. A man that I have great respect for because when I came to Werribee Baptist Church in 2018, I met this lovely couple. Claire and Barry Baxter are their names. And they have lived all over the world, speak multiple languages, and have raised children and seemingly quite successfully. And I thought, if it's all right with you, producer Simon,
it is.
I might invite him in. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Barry James Baxter.
There he is.
In the house. There he is.
Welcome.
How are you, mate?
Hi. You're putting me on the spot, are you?
This is what I do. I invite in super famous people and I ask them to explain themselves. So, you're a Londoner. You're a North Londoner.
Yes.
So, the first question is, Matildas or Lionesses?
Either.
No. He's gone right down the
middle. Cheating.
So you were able to watch the World Cup and barrack for both sides. Is that correct?
Yes.
But you didn't grow up. You're a North Londoner that doesn't follow European soccer at all.
No.
Wow.
Strange. I was not in the male household. I was in a female household with mother and grandmothers, two grandmothers. And that was my main influence when I was growing up. So,
as in they all lived in the same house together? Or
well, not the third grandmother. She lived in the adjacent suburb.
But you were raised in your home.
Yes.
You had your mum and her mother. Is that right? That was...
No, my father's mother.
Father's mother. Okay,
yeah.
Right. Mm. There we go. So you
and
had...
She was stone deaf. So I had to learn how to speak very lip-wise.
Right. So she read lips?
Yes, she used to be hilarious sometimes. But
did you, come on, did you ever, what was, Grandma, what did you call her? What did you call Grandma? Was she Grandma?
Yes, Grandma.
Just Grandma?
Grandma Baxter.
Grandma Baxter.
Yeah.
So were you the cheeky young lad that would mouth the wrong words to her to see if you could confuse? What pranks did you play on Grandma Baxter? Or was she scary and you didn't play any pranks on her?
Me, cheeky.
I can imagine. What? Go on. She's. You can tell us now. You're old enough now to tell us what you did as a young boy.
They've been declassified, the files, haven't they?
The files have been. How would you be cheeky to Grandma Baxter?
I wasn't. She would just sit in the car, in the chair and knit all day long.
Really?
Yes.
Would you chat with her?
Not unless we needed to communicate for some reason.
There you go.
No, there was not really a chat.
There you go.
Yes.
So
because I was at school and
studying. Mm-hmm. I believe you're a very studious young man because you went on to become an engineer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So your father died when you were seven.
Yes.
Do you have many memories of him?
Yeah, one or two. The most vivid one is that somehow a window got broken at home. I've no idea about culpability.
Still to this day, he denies it.
I can remember him coming home with the sheet of glass with some protection on it and him striding along carrying the sheet of glass.
Oh, well.
I don't know why that went into my mind and memory, and it just stuck.
He was a man who fixed things.
Yes.
What was his profession?
He was a teacher, and he studied chemistry.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he was more in the sciences. Yes. I believe now you're a North Londoner. Does that change your accent much? Is that a specific accent? Who's another famous North Londoner that we would have heard of?
No, look, any London accent. Well. You've got a variety of London accents going from Cockney right up to whatever. So.
And you can adapt to all of them, can you?
No, I don't try to adapt. I just try to understand.
I think your ability, I'm picking up on one of your life skills might be to listen to others.
Yes.
Yeah. So you were born in 1932.
Yes.
Which was a while ago. I believe you're going to be 91 in December of this year. Is that correct?
That's right. I'll make it.
Yeah. I'm excited about that. So producer Simon and I can organise the party if you like. I was thinking, actually, I do believe, even though you're not a sports nut, you did grow up playing badminton. We can touch on that later. But I believe you're a bit of a train nut. Is that right? You liked trains growing up?
Yes, I did. I always dreamed of having one of my own, but I didn't have one. But I managed to latch on to somebody in a Crusaders group, the leader, who had a wonderful 00-gauge railway in his backyard, and it was quite extensive, right down to the shed at the back.
My brain here was trying to work out, is this conversation about toys or trains?
What I'm going to put it out there to the Elaborators fans, if somebody could get Barry his own train for his 91st birthday, we're not talking about a toy train. We're talking about actual, if you can get him a train, that'd be great.
Awesome.
So, how big was this fellow's backyard? How big of a backyard do you have to have a train in it?
Well, it's a 00-gauge, which is the engines are about so long, I was going to say a foot long because I was England then.
You can say a foot long. We can.
So they're like the ones, there's one out Altona way that families can ride? Is it kind of that size where like the kids can sit on them?
No. It's quite, I mean, the gauge is about barely 2 inches wide. Of the tracks. Yeah, so that sets the scale of it all.
Okay, so I'm really confused now. I grew up with I had nothing. I had one train set, and usually upwards it was all I could do to find all the pieces to put it together because it had been handed down through three different people.
Yes.
So this was but that was a real amazing connection for you, because through your love of trains, you connected with a man who ended up being quite influential in your life, and he was the leader of the, as you say, the Crusaders. This is Mr. Bevington we're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, that's right. Yes, he had this wonderful backyard. I think he must have been a bachelor or widower. Because I never saw any sign of female in the house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, of course, with a crowd of boys, you put them into the garden as quick as you can do so they don't do too much damage. And so you just run your trains backwards and forwards with a few monitors, making sure you've got a certain distance between trains and all that sort of thing.
Mm.
And halfway through, we'd break up and go in for a Bible reading and a bit of a talk, and then back out to the trains again. So,
So the attraction was that he would have all of the little boys would come, and they would. How old were you? Do you remember how old you were when you were doing that activity?
Oh, probably about 10, 12.
Mm. So Mr. Bevington was influential as a, because again, you were raised by your mum and your grandma, so you don't have dad at home.
Yes.
Do some of these, was Mr. Bevington a good father figure or male leader in your life? Do you remember?
Not as a particular person, but as the Crusader group that he was part of.
Mm.
We met every Sunday at a local school, and all the kids came along to that one and sang choruses and
yeah. So, but it was part of what built community for you.
Yes,
and part of your faith journey as well. Tell me about Mr. Cooney. I'm interested in Mr. Cooney.
Oh, he was a teacher who belonged to the choir that I was in, the local church,
mm-hmm.
and he took me under his wing, and I used to go to his home, and he used to introduce me to a lot of literature and that sort of thing, because English was his topic.
Right.
And he had a Catholic background, so he was a bit different to the church that I was going for,
mm-hmm.
but it was just all experience to take in.
Yeah, well, yeah, you've got...
Yeah, because the Sunday services that we had then, we had a lot of Bible readings, always the Old Testament and New Testament, every service was a reading, and sang the Psalms and all that sort of thing, so it was a lot of background about the Bible.
So I believe it wasn't necessarily your choice to join the choir. I believe the term you used was you were joined.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, it might not have been my choice, but I was quite happy to go along with it.
Mm.
And my brother joined me when he was the right age. He was two and a half years younger than me.
What was your brother's name?
Timothy.
So Timothy and Barry singing in the choir.
Yes.
Do you want to give us a solo?
No.
He tries that all the time, Barry.
Give it a crack.
Don't worry, it's okay.
Give it a crack. You don't want to sing the Lord's Prayer for us or something?
Might sing it the Creed.
Go for it. The Creed, according to... No, here we go. No, but these were formative years for you in North London. And then somewhere in there, you're at church and you meet a lovely young Swiss woman.
Yes.
Called Claire.
Yes.
And you
we did.
Yeah. So church worked out pretty good for you.
Yeah, very good. Especially with the Harvest Festival junket that we had one Saturday, and we had a get together in the church hall, and
yeah,
I asked her to dance, and we got on pretty well.
So. Oh, put it there, young man. Look at that. Made the moves at the church dance. Love it. So that was that's great. And you were married fairly shortly after, I believe it was.
Yes, within 3 months.
Within 3 months.
Yeah, that was pretty.
Kids, don't try this at home.
No, we actually got married in England because you have to have 3 weeks for the banns of marriage to be declared, and it was all legal. You just have to do that sort of thing. So we got married in England because I didn't have 3 weeks of leave that I could spend in Switzerland, where we were going to have our official wedding. So, we got married twice. Sorry.
Producer Simon, are you following this story?
I am.
Yeah.
And you say don't try it at home, but it's
I love it.
How many years ago was that?
Practical. How many years have you been married to Claire?
Oh.
Put you on the spot now.
Well, over 60.
Wow. What year were you married? Do you remember what year it was?
60.
Well,
around about 60, 61. Yeah. Would that be right?
That sounds about right to me. I think you've done marvelously. Now, when you got married, and again, we've been talking about being dads and you know, how we feel about the job we're doing. Did you want to be a father? Was that something you'd wanted as a young man?
Before I got married, I was always looking at babies and prams and stuff like that, and for some strange reason, but yes.
But you've always had this affinity with children. You've been very good with children.
Yeah.
You have two natural-born daughters of your own. You have one adoptive daughter.
Yes.
And over the journey, you and Claire have fostered many, many children.
Yes.
I think I've got here... I've got to get this. Sandrine. Did I get that right?
Yes.
I did check in with Claire to make sure I got that pronunciation as correct as I could. So Sandrine was born in London in 61. And Claire Anne,
yes.
Is your other daughter, and she's 2 years younger than Sandrine.
Yeah.
And then in 65, just before you both moved to Australia, you adopted Gabby.
Yes. That's right.
And so you came out to Australia with three young daughters.
Yeah.
And said, let's give it a go.
Yes. And Gabby learned to walk on the boat.
Oh, my goodness.
She was that small.
That is, that's a different definition of sea legs, I've got to tell you.
There's two parts to that. The fact that it was boat.
Boat.
And having one that young on the boat.
I was going to say, I think you get some sort of parenting medal for that,
absolutely.
Don't you?
Well, you know, they had it very well organised as far as children were concerned. They had a separate crèche that they looked after them, so it gave us a bit more freedom. But it was still an anxious
time. Sorry, where is this boat, and how can Simon and I get it?
Look, it wasn't a good start, because when you start, you go across the English Channel.
Mm.
And pick up some people in Holland who were coming out here as well. And then you go across the Bay of Biscay, which is notoriously rough.
Mm.
And so nothing really happens until you get to Gibraltar. You're all trying to get over seasickness.
And Gabby was just trying to walk.
Yeah, and not only that, Claire was in one cabin and I was in another, and we had the children split between us.
Oh, My goodness. Do you remember why that was the case? There was no family cabins or?
Yes, that's right. That's the way we were allocated.
Golly gosh.
The medals keep stacking up on this journey right here.
I guess we split the children up the way we wanted it, but it was two cabins.
Golly gosh. So far you've got three gold medals as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
For 6 weeks.
Mm.
Ding, other medal.
All I've got for you is this.
Yeah, our studio audience is very impressed with this story.
I can't.
6 weeks.
Six weeks between two cabins, children going between one who doesn't walk, a toddler. Can I
just tell you a tale of Gabby when she learnt how to walk?
Please do.
She used to go around all in the salon where we're having afternoon tea, and she'd go round to all the different passengers and collect their spoons off their tea sauces and put them in the... Everybody thought she was cute.
The great spoon thief.
The great spoon thief of 65. Yeah. Mm. The boat returned with a lot less spoons. Yeah. I love it. You've enjoyed being a parent. You've enjoyed being a dad, and you still enjoy that role.
Yes.
where Simon and I are midway through raising children. Have you got some advice for us?
Try as hard as you can to keep you cool when everything goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to be more the peacemaker, and Claire tended to be the disciplinarian. So mm-hmm. one of the pair of you have got to keep talking to the children, whatever.
So you were the diplomat?
Tried to be.
Mm. Mm. And the children were always able to come to you and talk?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember having, you know, because you raising girls, a bit different.
Yes.
They were able to have those conversations with you, and it feels like you were the kind of dad that said, you can talk to me about anything.
I'm not sure that I asked for trouble.
You shouldn't have had children then.
But if they wanted it, they could, yes.
Mm. Yeah. Do you remember, were there particular moments where you felt like you couldn't, you didn't have what it took to be a dad?
Not really. I didn't feel a failure, but you don't win all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, the children have got to learn to stand on their own two feet, and that's the job of the parents.
Mm.
A, to make them able to stand on their two legs, and the other thing is to let them go when the time comes, and that's quite difficult.
Yeah. I feel like that second part is harder, letting them go.
Yes, yeah, because your judgment and their judgment's different.
Mm. What I know, you both Claire and yourself, grew up in church.
Yes,
faith has been a very central part of your whole journey. Did you pray with the children? What did you do with the children to help them understand your faith?
Yes, we did. We did pray with them, but we also always insisted that they come to church while they were under our control. But later on, when they got well into their teens, they had to make their own choices about where they went.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't necessarily always our church that they went to. They found their mates and their friends going to a different youth group, so that's where they went and didn't mind that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that approach, just allowing them to, as you say, find their own feet.
Well, it's the job of a parent, isn't it, to somehow get them on the road.
Mm. You're 90, going to be 91 later in the year. You've got the three children plus many that you've fostered and adopted. Do you ever stop? Feeling that do you ever stop praying for them, thinking about them? Are you able to let them go more now, or do they still come to mind every day? And
oh yes, you. You can never let go as a parent completely from their, you know, thinking about them. But
do you miss having them at your home? How does it feel all these years later? What's it like when they come and visit?
When you've got children that are now 60,
yeah,
they can't expect them to be at home. I mean, love their visits, but
go away. Do you still see them as your little girls though? No, they're your big girls.
No, they're adults, and we try to communicate as adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And if we don't agree, we don't tell them too hard.
Right. So I know that. You had your 90th birthday and your girls did give a bit of a speech. Do you remember what they said about you? They stood up and said thank you to you and said a few nice things about you?
Yes. I was supposed to be Mr. Fix-It at one stage, and my memories get not too good.
Whatever you say next, we're fine with. I know that one of the principles you talked about as a dad was your first reaction is,
oh, don't react. Yes.
Don't react. And that's where that peacemaker.
pretty Anglo-Saxon.
Well, I was looking at your upper lip and it does seem stiff. But you've lived a few lives. You did your national service in the Air Force, I believe.
Yes.
What was your role in the Air Force?
I was an instrument technician.
I'm assuming you're not talking about French horns and violins.
You're right.
But
no, I was on a helicopter squadron, search and rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the highlights of the summer was swim out into the estuary, and they'd fly out and practice their winching up into the thing. So
they didn't make it easy. You had to swim out there.
Oh,
and then they'd rescue and pull you up into the helicopter.
Yes.
And you would check, then you would get into the helicopter and check that the instruments that you'd already installed and made sure that were reading the right way.
No, we did that before it flew.
Exactly. Well, yes. Yes, preparation is key. So that was 2 years. So can you fly a helicopter?
No. I was ground crew.
Right.
Only officers flew the airplanes.
Mm. Right. But you could fix them.
You could fix them.
And then you went and did your apprenticeship, or was it electrical engineering?
Mechanical engineering, basically, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then for many years you did a lot more training and became part of the Institute, I believe.
Yes, part of the Institute of Mechanical Engineers.
Mm. Mm. So I think maybe the challenge to us is the elaborator listenership is send us a train. A non-working train, I think, is what we're asking for at this point, and Bazza will fix it for you.
Well, I must tell you that later, much later on, when the children were well grown up, we had a little room at home, and I turned that into a little train room, but on a much smaller scale.
So, does that train room, is that still in your house? Do you have a train?
No, it isn't. I had as soon as we moved away from. When we moved towards the country, we gave the whole train set away to
producer Simon still has a beef with his parents who moved from. This is a painful
painful for my older siblings
who gave away all of the original Star Wars gear. I believe, wasn't it?
Oh
yes,
right,
yes. Okay. When my family moved from Australia to England, they could not fit in their luggage.
Mm.
The plethora of original Star Wars figurines, toys and action figures and all of that. And they gave them all away for free at a garage sale in like 1990. So yes, Star Wars was dead in 1990.
Yeah. Mm, it's back again.
Don't forget, I did have girls.
Yeah, yes. So what toys did the girls like then?
Traditional.
Yeah. So
I mean, they started off with dolls and then they graduated to things like lizards and that sort of thing in a box under the bed. And Gabby had her favourite dog that she used to dress up.
So basically the dolls just became live animals that they dressed
exactly.
up. That's wonderful. Tell me, what led you to foster and care for other children in that time? Because I know that you had your own children.
Yes.
And it was a little bit later on. The girls had grown up. They were a little bit older.
Yes.
And you started to foster children
as well.
Yeah,
well, you hear a lot of tales about people in strife and in torn families and thought we ought to do something about it because they were asking for volunteers to be foster parents. So.
I believe you did some short-term stays and some longer-term stays.
Yes, we had some short-term stays which would probably be about, up to a month.
Mm.
And some of them were a bit older than our children, which wasn't difficult. I mean, they'd be about, 7 to 10, and we hadn't got that age, and so we said to the agency that we'd prefer to have babies, and because that was within our experience.
And I believe at one stage you did attempt to look after boys, and it was somewhat of a shock.
Well, yes, I mean that was much later because all those I've been speaking about were in England,
right?
But when we came here, the same thing occurred that we heard that there was a shortage of foster parents, and we volunteered and we got two boys that had been from a a difficult home, and they'd been both in separate foster homes. And the agency wanted to try and get them together, so we agreed to take the two of them, and we had them for 2 years, and which was totally different from girls. Absolutely.
I believe with the girls you never sustained any injuries, but with the boys the story was a little different.
Yes. They tended to enjoy rough houses. So we were wrestling one day, and I think one of them jumped on me, and Gare tells me I lost my balance, so that's a good story. So when I went to the doctor a few days later, not for something else, I said that I'd got a bruised ribs, and said, "What have you been doing, having a wrestle with the boys?" And said, "What do you expect?"
If you're going to raise boys, expect some bruised ribs. Is yes. that the
yeah. bruised ribs, worn out shoes because they kick everything inside. Both of them insisting on going through the doorway at the same time, so they jam and things fly. Oh. Yeah, hilarious.
Bit more damage to property with boys is probably
a little bit, but.
Yeah. And have you and Claire been able to stay in contact with some of those children over the years?
Yeah, actually, the two boys came back. They saw her mother after they were taken away from us because the parents were talking about taking them up to a caravan park in Queensland or something like that.
Right.
As soon as the agency heard about this, Claire phoned them up as soon as she heard, and they pounced and took them off them again and arranged other fostering with their relatives this time.
Right.
And so we lost complete touch with them for a long time. And then later on, apparently, one of them talked to their mother and said, "Were we about still?" And yes, we were here. And she thought we'd like to see them. So they came around separately. One of them was just about to get married.
Oh.
And the other one was, he was training to be a chef. So
wonderful.
So it was lovely to catch up with them again.
That must be nice to know that you've been part of a child's journey.
Look, I think they had it pretty rough, whatever.
Mm.
But the eldest boy seemed to have latched onto a very nice girl. She was a Mormon, but
<That's okay. laughs>
whatever. They seemed to be happy together. So
I was going to say, latching onto a nice girl seems to have been your strategy as well.
Oh, perfect.
It's worked out well. Producer Simon and I we've attempted the same thing.
Yes.
I'm not sure if they'd call it entrapment yet, but.
Which way around?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So when it comes to your parenting, I think what's lovely is talking to yourself as someone who's been there, done that, and bought the T-shirt in so many ways.
Mm.
And you're still praying for your children.
Oh, yes.
You still love looking after and caring for others.
Yes.
It's still very much a part of yours and Claire's love, isn't it, to invite people into your home and to have meals together?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Look, I think that mainly comes from Claire because she was part of a big family. They had 7 siblings.
Yeah.
And so their parents were generous. They just invite somebody in and said, just sort of stretch whatever you've got.
Mm.
So
I think when I think of yourself and your parenting strategy, which is the best reaction is to not react, to be the peacemaker. But I'm also told that this was something that you were as a young man as well. That when the other fellas in the national service that you were doing
in the Air Force,
in the Air Force, when they got in trouble with the MPs, what happened?
Well, The MPs were waiting for us at the gate when we walked back because we'd been chasing the bus, and some of them were.
So they'd been down the pub, I believe, and they missed the bus back to the bus.
And some of them weren't too happy, so they let the passengers know. And so they asked us what the MPs asked us what we were up to and what sort of language we were using. And I just said, in my naivety, I said, "Oh, I don't swear." Mm-hmm. And somehow they believed me. I didn't get into trouble. I don't know whether anybody got into trouble, but just being confronted with MPs is sufficient warning.
Well, I love it. Well, thank you so much, my friend, for spending some time with us, for the peacemaker that you are, for the friend that you are, and you and Claire have been to so many children, and for being the man who, you know, has stuck to his principles all this time. Mm. It's actually a very much a privilege for us to chat with you. So thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Oh, and happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there anything, any words of wisdom you'd like to give us before we finish up? You can, producer Simon and I are at your feet to learn.
Absolutely.
No, just the same. Keep your cool under all circumstances.
There it is. Okay. Well, we decided to elaborate with one of the great men that I've met in my life, and in the end, it all comes down to something nice and simple. Keep your cool.
Yep.
Love it. Barry James Baxter, it has been a joy. Thank you very much for spending some time with us on The Elaborators today. You're a beautiful man, and it doesn't matter if the Lionesses or the Matildas are on the screen, you're Barrick for both. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm quite happy with the Matildas. They're pretty good ones.
Yep.
Just got to learn a bit more, that's all.
There you go. If anybody's listening at Matilda's organisation, Barry is offering.
And keep you cool.
Keep you cool, and he'll come and give you a lesson. Look, I think that'll do for today's episode of The Elaborators.
Sure. I need to put a shout out that I forgive my mum and dad for selling the Star Wars toys. I'm just going to lay that out there, everybody.
And to my dad, Don, who I often call Bob, I love you.
Yep.
Even though you're wrong sometimes. But to all the dads out there that are trying their best, we love yous all. Good luck to you. And like Bazza, keep you cool. Yep. And we will see you next time on The Elaborators. Okay, so Barry, this is what we do now. We just wave at the camera.
Yeah.
Oh, and you can do a little dance if you want.
Thank you.